You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Welcome to episode 126 of the NastyCast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dock, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And I'm joined today by Van, the producer, Lee. What's up, Van?
That's right. You can pretty much just call me Mel Brooks. I couldn't think of his name. That's the guy who made the movie The Producer. So if you don't know the joke, I'm going to explain it because people love that. Hello, I'm Van Lee. I am the... I decided you asked if I would post the episodes and do the editing, and I have the time, so I decided I will, on one condition, and that is that you refer to me as the producer.
The producer.
And you graciously agreed. So, yes, I am now the producer.
It's highly prestigious.
Indeed.
We are also joined today by Ron, the editorializinator, Rigney.
That's amazing. Hey, I hope you guys had a very patriotic and American 4th of July.
It was an interesting for me. I worked. I don't know about you guys, but I worked and it rained on 4th of July here. So I work in a theater setting and we went from what I would estimate to be maybe 80 people on two showings to almost 400. And I did not have the staffing for it, so it was awful. But to make up for it, I went home and I participated in something that my friends and I do every year, and that is we watch the movie Roadhouse.
I thought you were going to say hot dog eating contest, but Roadhouse, that's much more obscure.
That is definitely American.
It's amazing. That's such a good movie because, I mean, if you guys didn't know, pain don't hurt.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, you need to watch it.
It's been a very long time since I've seen it.
He tears out someone's trachea in a fight and throws him in the river.
Is that Kurt Russell?
No, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
You were close.
Yeah, they're like the same guy, except one's alive.
One's alive, and one was blonde, one was a... Can you refer to men as, like, brunette? That just sounds really weird. Like
that
Kurt
does.
I don't feel comfortable saying, oh, yeah, Kurt Russell, he's a brunette.
That's a good question. I've never thought of that.
He's.
I don't know that I want to know, though. Now that you said it, it doesn't sound right.
I mean, I'm a brunette. Nathan's a brunette. Do you have hair, Ron?
When I did have hair, when I was a strapping young lad, I was a brunette as well.
Okay. See, there you go.
I'm a blondie, by the way.
You're a blondie. You're not a blondie.
Oh yeah. Haven't you been? You've been looking at the wrong portion of my nudes that I was sending you.
Oh shoot. Okay, that explains it.
Yep. Sometimes the sunlight, you know, shines in a certain way, too. Makes it look a little off.
Would that be a dock pic? Because you're docking?
That's right. Every photo that I ever send or upload is dot dock.
I think you should call your streamers that now, your dock pics.
Oh, no.
That's pretty good.
We were just talking about how bad they are this week, too, before the show. I definitely do not want my name attached to any of those guys.
Maybe next. Maybe a week after next.
This is like the not doc picks. That's catchy. Maybe I'll start doing like a... Maybe I'll change the name of my bust picks from dudes and don'ts to docs and knocks or something.
Docs and don't docs.
Dockers and knockers.
Ooh, that's nice.
There you go.
Anyway, on today's show, we are going to talk about replacing Trey Turner. Even though the news is like a week old, but I think it happened either the night that we recorded or the night after we recorded. So we haven't talked about it yet, so we're going to talk about it now. And then a bunch of other outfields, midfields, Yankees, like always. Play legit or quit. We're going to talk about some closers and some prospects and close out the show with the aforementioned streamers for the weekend. But before we get going, Ron, how excited are you to attend the Futures game?
Gonna be awesome. You know, down here in South Florida, it's over in Miami. Looking forward to going. You know, I think I've seen the U.S. roster. The U.S. roster, I'm gonna have to pull it up here. Looks pretty solid. I didn't get a chance to see what the world team looks like though. But on Sunday, you know, you get there. I think they're having a Pudge Rodriguez bobblehead that you get as well. I'm pretty stoked about that.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, so
add to your massive collection.
Add to the massive collection as if I need to do that. And then you get the.
Now, let me ask you this before we move on. Okay. Do you have, and the people out there in podcast land, they haven't seen the photo that you shared with us, which is like basically a room filled with bobbleheads. So, do you is there any rhyme or reason to how they're positioned? Or do you have them sorted by team or anything?
I color. Have. They're for the most part random. Like I have a couple. Like I collect the Colts. I collect Pacers because I'm from Indiana. I collect the Rays. Kind of have those together. But other than that, they're just kind of random. Random order, really no rhyme or reason.
You should order them by rookie year.
That might take a while.
Alphabetized. Exactly. You can do all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's endless, really. I mean, I could do by sport. I could do by birthday, maybe.
Mm.
Zodiac sign.
That's in depth. I like that. Yeah, like, this is an Aries. Here's Eric Ibar, the Aries of, of my collection.
Yeah, you know.
You could start by peak year. Just start with the best peak year. That would start a lot of debates at the Rigney household as well when people come over.
Scottie Pippen had a better season than Matt Kemp.
That'd be about the kind of debates I would have.
The picture we received, by the way, made it look like, to me, like there's that scene in Game of Thrones where you see all the wildfire in the hallway.
Wildfire.
And it's just like almost miles of wildfire. But that's exactly what your bobblehead collection was. It's just a slow pan down these miles of bobbleheads of tiny little people with shaky heads. Okay.
Ron's legs, however, also, you know, look like wildfire this week a little bit.
Yeah.
Got some sun.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, you especially saw the my right leg, didn't you?
I saw both legs.
Okay.
That's where you were setting your plate with your hot dog on it and your chips and so forth.
Yeah. I had to make sure it was to one side or another. So,
sure.
Figure out my sunscreen. But
comfort's important.
That'll be the last time I do that. So.
Yeah, safety first. That's what I always say. Yes. Anyway, futures game.
I see. Actually, I'm looking at the roster here. We've got Brendan Rodgers is there, Ryan McMahon, Nick Senzel, Lewis Brinson. There's
Scott
a lot of
Kingery.
Good players.
Scott Kingery is there.
Scott Kingery, Zardoz, and so forth.
Oh man,
they should. They should have Sean Connery like doing the names.
They just announcing them. As they come out.
He could be the PA. I wonder, maybe he just lives in Florida. Who knows? I don't know where that guy's kicking around these days.
Well, for example, for the world team, there's a right-hand pitcher for Seattle in Double A named Thiago Vieira, which excites me to no end. I've never heard of this guy. Thiago, Thyago Vieira.
I got you. I see that.
It's a good name. Thiago.
There's some good ones on the world team because, like I said, I haven't seen that. I'm excited to see Mike Soraka. He's a guy that I like a lot. Josh Naylor's a guy I'm excited to see his bombs for. San Diego, former Marlin, Ahmed Rosario.
Victor Robles, yeah.
Oh, Ronald Acuna's a guy that I like, yeah.
Yeah, some of those
team is loaded.
Some of those guys that you might not have heard of, too, are the most fun to see. Like when the Futures game, we're talking a little bit before we started recording here, when a couple buddies and myself went to the Futures game when they were in Minneapolis a couple years ago, and Pete O'Brien was one of the guys that basically as soon as he started, we got there early so we could watch the batting practice. And for some reason, they wouldn't let you watch the world batting practice, but you could watch the U.S. batting practice. And so we did that.
Racists.
Yeah, I have no idea why, but that's just the way it was. So like I said, we got to watch the prodigious power from Joey Gallo and Chris Bryant. Good times. Joey Gallo smashing the windshield of a truck. But like Pete O'Brien, none of us had ever heard of him at that point. And there's one thing that he has, very little else, but he's got tons of raw power. And so he was just cranking out bombs all over the place. And we're like, who the hell is this guy? And so we were all just racing each other, you know, to add him in all our leagues. So it's a lot of fun, man. So I'm jealous. I wish that someday, you know, hopefully it'll be closer again so I can attend. Maybe a little less excited.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, maybe a little less exciting as the celebrity softball tournament.
Where you get to see, like, what's his name? The cranky old man who was a closer and he doesn't like baseball to change anymore. Goose Gossage. Yeah. Maybe you might get to see him complain a lot.
Because that always happens. Probably be there.
Yeah.
I'm sure Andre Dawson. I bet Andre Dawson will play just because he's a. I don't know what. At least he used to have a position in the Marlins front office.
The
so
Hawk,
I would assume he'll probably be there, yeah.
Or it's like that commercial from 10 years ago where he's stuck in the ivy in Chicago. Do either of you remember this?
Yes.
It's on MLB TV all day. It was great.
That
great
was
commercial.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
What year is it?
Yeah. And then there's always Jenny Finch, which is probably my favorite part of watching.
Always Jenny Finch, and there's always Raleigh Fingers, too, with his mustache.
So there you go. It's an exciting weekend then. Of course, we're talking about the Futures game and the celebrity softball game. And they're like, oh, yeah, also the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game. Those are kind of important, too.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I would much rather go to the Futures game myself than the Home Run Derby, but the ticket prices are vastly in disagreement of that.
Well, yeah, I will. You know what I will say, though? If you compare, because I look just to see what they would be since it's down here. I don't know when the next time is it would ever come down here. The tickets have dropped massively.
Really?
To go, if you search them on StubHub, you'd be surprised at what you – I think you could get a strip of tickets for everything that goes on for the weekend. Now, you're probably sitting nosebleeds. I think the cheapest I saw on StubHub today was like $258.
That's it? Wow.
That's it.
I mean, I'm tempted to just drive down there.
It's very tempting. It's very tempting. Hmm. But yeah, and that was like, I think that when I first got an email about that, you could purchase them through MLB.com and they were like upwards of like $600 or $700.
Hmm.
So
yeah,
that's
more in line with what I had seen when I was looking it up when they were in Minnesota.
Yeah. On a real quick serious note, so I'm assuming you guys have heard the news that, of course, the All-Star game doesn't count anymore. It doesn't. The winner does not get home field advantage in the World Series. They dropped that. And in fact, the incentive they're giving is that, I guess, the players on the winning team each get $20,000, which is pretty cool. I mean, that gives them the incentive to win to an extent. I mean, we're also talking about a lot of millionaires that probably $20,000 is a drop in the hat to them.
That's a weekend.
But do you like that? Do you prefer that it doesn't count anymore, or did you like the old way?
Oh, the old way was the dumbest thing in sports. Like, this is way better. I mean, they mostly don't care anyway, but I mean, it should definitely be judged. You should be rewarded for having a good team, you know, and get your home field advantage as opposed to a stupid All-Star game where, you know, some of the guys maybe could care less anyway.
Yep, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Well, no other league does that either. I mean, you look at the other All-Star games, the Pro Bowl's a joke. They need to just get rid of it.
And yeah, that's the
NBA. The NBA All-Star game is like 210 to 205 up and down. Dunks and alley-oops and threes. So there's really no other All-Star game that I think is as fun to watch, but it shouldn't matter that my team gets home field advantage because players that aren't even related to my team played well, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and there's a lot of people, fans in particular, or quote analysts that will throw a fit about players who get elected to the All-Star team. I don't care. I honestly don't care. And in fact, if I watch it, I don't sit down and watch it like I'd watch an Angels game. I do other stuff. I just kind of have it on in the background because it just doesn't interest me for whatever reason. I mean, I don't care that Logan Morrison would be the starting first baseman. He had a good year, so I think he should be, but it doesn't bother me if he got it or if he didn't, because it's, I don't know, it just doesn't interest me that much for whatever reason.
The only part of that gets sort of my panties in a twist. Like I care, I don't, or like I said, I don't care as much maybe as some of the other folks out there. But like when you see the likes of Eric Hosmer, who's on the brink of, you know, getting voted in based on a crappy season, just because Royals fans just continue to you know, vote in their own players regardless of whether they deserve it or not. Like, that is what pisses me off. I'm like, no, okay, well, I can't allow that to happen, so I'll go vote for Yonder Alonso, who has 15 more home runs or whatever, you know? So So that's the only thing that really bothers me. But otherwise, yeah, I don't care too much. But it was interesting that it was enough to ruffle the feathers of Kenley Jansen, I guess, about the Dodgers fans not getting out and supporting their team, but...
Nah, that's California, though. The Angels are the same way. The fans in California are like, yeah, this is fun. This is great. We enjoy it. But St. Louis, or to an extent, these weird Royals fans are hardcore. I mean, they're mean about it. Like, people get in fights around here about it. In fact, my friend Brian got punched in the face by a Giants fan because they were both being obnoxious. And this was at a Giants game in San Francisco.
Mm.
And just as to give you guys an insight into how that Royal stuff happens, I get stuff in the mail, and I'm 3.5 hours from Kansas City, but I'll get stuff in the mail saying, vote for your favorite Royals. They put out marketing material. They put it on the radio. They want everybody to vote, and they like put a concerted effort into getting people to vote for the Royals.
Clearly a thing. It just bugs the crap out of me.
It's dumb. Yeah.
If they don't deserve it, then don't vote them in there. I mean, it's one thing to support a team. Oh, whatever. Like I said, it doesn't matter that much anymore if they're just playing for $20,000. So.
Yep.
Then it doesn't bother me quite as much, which is a good thing. I need less stress in my life. Especially
how much,
because,
how much do you guys think that it hurts the Dodgers that they're on the West Coast and they're on so late and then not the rest of the country sees them?
There's a little of that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think whatever, I don't know, I'm just going off on a tangent now. I was just going to say whatever they suffer from that, they make up for with an enormous payroll. But
sure, sure. But West Coast teams in general, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, Mike Trout is, yeah, he's universally known now, but I'd say he's probably less known than, you know, whatever Yankees player you want to talk about, just because that's just the way it is. I mean, the West Coast guys just don't get the airtime that I would say that the others do. And I'm not being, this isn't a conspiracy theory. It's just common sense. I mean, they're on later. People aren't up as late.
No, it's a thing. A lot of people miss out on that West Coast baseball just because it's later. But anyway, let's get into some fun news. Talking about Trey Turner, who broke his friggin' wrist a week ago. This literally, you guys, this bummed me out more than anything else this season. Because I, in the podcast league in particular, I had just traded for him 2 or 3 weeks ago. I traded like Matt Carpenter and another piece, which I've forgotten already. But to get Trey Turner, because I was studying the standings. I'm like, man, I can make a huge run if I can just get a whole bunch of steals. I can climb all the way to the top of steals. So I managed to get a hold of Trey Turner. And then this happens. And I basically just threw my hands up and like that basically conceded competing for the league. I moved all the way up to fifth place. And I was like, oh, I'm just kind of screwed. So I'm a mopey moperson about this one. So I don't know, Van, we'll start with you. You got any replacements out there for Trey Turner?
It's sad for baseball because Turner's a fun player to watch, even though I disagreed with his draft position and so on and so forth. I like him as a player. I don't think I have any more. Yeah, I definitely don't have any stock in him because of the cost, and I traded him for pieces that I thought would be better. So there are a couple of players out there that I kind of thought would be interesting. This first one's a well-known guy, but he's still owned in less than 30% of leagues. Or I should say he's owned in 70% of leagues, which is a lot, but I mean, he's still on the waiver wire, and that's Cameron Maben. And I think it's crazy that he's, you know, got 30% of his leagues that he's not owned in because of the year he's having. He's been unbelievable. He's been Mike Trout without Mike Trout, sitting a little over 250, but he's getting on base at 350 clip. He's got power. He's got speed. He's doing all kinds of good stuff. So I like Cameron Maben for that. On the side of players that would probably be available, Turner's replacement at the top of the order, Michael Taylor, is out there in a lot of leagues. He's having a pretty good year. 280, 323, 515. He's got 12 homers, 10 steals. If he's out there, he's worth a pickup. I don't think he's good as what he's doing, but if he can continue at even, you know, a 80% pace of what he's doing, then that's definitely worth it. The BABIP's a little high, of course, so that's going to come down, but you never know. And then lastly, Orlando Arcia of the Brewers has really had a good couple of games, mm-hmm. and he's up to 295, 334, 439, and 8 homers, 5 steals. Jonathan Villar is still at the top of the order and striking out 4 times a game, and I don't think that lasts. Arcia's batting 8th, so I think this is the last little bit of chance you're going to get to pick him up or trade for him before he really goes to the top of the order and puts in some little bit better counting stats. So I really like him too, and he's not owned in a lot of leagues either.
Yeah, so I'm kind of mopey McMoper face too, because I had him in a couple of leagues, and I thought I was set up pretty well in my CBS Dynasty, because I really struggled in steals last year. So I went out and got D. Gordon, Trey Turner, and Jonathan Villar, and that worked for a little while, but I'm down to D. Gordon now. But I kind of focus on shortstop, because that's where I play him in the couple of leagues that I have him in. And so Van stole one of mine, Orlando Arcia, which I was amazed to find that he's still only a third owned, 30% of leagues he's owned in. I thought that was kind of shocking that the recent call up and the way he's played. Steven Drew is a direct replacement at shortstop. He's only 1% owned, and he's having a decent season, but we know he's kind of injury prone, and I don't think that the 308 average is going to stay up there. And a 351 OBP, I don't think that's going to stay either. But for being a guy that's 1% owned, you could do a lot worse. I threw out a guy that we'll talk a little bit in a little bit here about the Cardinals infield, Paul DeJong, 6% owned. And then Kettle Marte is a guy that got called up. Now, I don't know how long he will be up. He got called up because of Chris Owings being out, was mashing at AAA, put up some decent numbers with Seattle, but kind of faded. But got dealt for Gene Segura, and he's only 2% owned too. So those are some guys at shortstop you could look at. But as far as replacing, you're not going to be able to replace the steals. You're obviously not counting on Trey Turner for power, but those steals are not. There's no way you're going to replace the 30 some steals or whatever that he had before he went on the DL.
That's what makes it so tough, is there really just is no replacing that elite stolen base production. And even if you trade for Billy Hamilton, he just doesn't give you the same, you know, the power, and you're not going to get quite as many runs scored. I forget what I think I tweeted about Trey Turner's past 162 games, you know, how ridiculous his run score total was too. So it's just a net loss, but Orlando Arcia was the direct replacement that I used in the podcast league, and I was excited to pick him up at least to a certain extent. But one more guy that you guys haven't brought up is Manny Margot out in San Diego. He had a calf injury, but he stole two bases pretty much right after he came off of the disabled list. And so I'm surprised he's only got 9 steals actually so far, but he's hitting .280. You know, he's leading off more often than not. So a little bit of power, 5 home runs too. So that's a guy in I don't know, deeper leagues, probably. Hopefully you have something a little better than Margot in 10, 12 team mixers. But if you're just grasping at straws, I think that Margot could score a fair bit of runs and steal some bags for you. Maybe another guy, another outfielder of interest, Nick Williams. He was promoted to the Phillies of Philadelphia, Ron. What do you think about Nick Williams' outlook for the season?
I mean, he's worth a shot to if you need some outfield help. He's only competing in left field with Daniel Nava, so his competition for a starting gig is not going to be that great. It speaks a little bit to his talent and the tools that he has. He was a piece that the Rangers sent over in a Cole Hamels deal. I would like to see him striking out a little bit less. He struck out at about a 30% clip at AAA. He was only walking at about a 5% rate, so I'd like to see that even out a little bit. But if the Phillies could get it going, and he ends up giving them something, they've got a nice little sneaky outfield there with Odubel Herrera and Aaron Altherr out there in Philly. So I think if they can start to get more of these kids up, especially offensively, but I think he's worth taking a shot on. I mean, you know, these guys get called up, you know, and they get called up because of the tools they have. They get something like 15 bombs in AAA. So he might hurt you a little bit as far as OBP just because of the strikeouts. But if you need a little bit of pop, if you need a little bit of outfield depth, there's not much holding him back from getting playing time. So I say go for it.
Yeah, that's the whole reason why I would do it. I think of a lot of these rookie kids that get called up, like Clint Frazier we'll talk about later, they might be blocked in some capacity. I don't really think Williams is really blocked just because of that team and the fact that they're in such bad shape as far as standings wise. If they're going to call him up and get him service time, let him play. Just see what he can do. Now, that said, I've never really been that big of a Nick Williams fan. He has power, obviously. I think he hits, 15 and 306 at bats this year. That's the best power he's shown with the .230 ISO. He can steal a little bit, but he walks at maybe a 5% clip and he strikes out at 30%, which is acceptable these days, but it's still not great. I just am not that excited about him. I think maybe you get some power, but in this day and age, power is pretty easy to come by. So I don't know. Nothing really draws me to him. But if you've got the bench spot and you need to throw somebody in the outfield and just kind of see what you can get, you might as well. I mean, you could do much, much worse than this kid. The problem I have, too, also is he's almost 24 years old, so he's kind of an older, quote, prospect. So guys like that, I like guys like that who were called up really young and struggled, because then a lot of the field or players like us will see that and write him off. But he's never really been up. So this is the kind of guy that I don't really have all that much interest in as far as age and tools and so forth.
Yeah, he's worth a spec ad for me in deeper leagues. But I've never been a Nick Williams guy. You know, you cited that big strikeout rate, and I just don't like poor plate discipline guys in general. But it's one thing if you strike out 30% and you have like 35 home run power. But if you strike out 30% of the time and you're hitting 20 home runs a year, that's a big difference. And you're not getting on base, and you know your steals totals aren't great either. I think a little bit of his value is inflated by that stint at Reading, which is the Phillies AA affiliate, and that's just a launching pad there, and that kind of boosted his stock quite a bit after the trade. So overall, I'm just not too psyched on him. I don't know if he's going to stay up. I don't really care. I'm not adding him anywhere. I don't have too high opinion on him. I'd actually probably have more interest in Daniel Nava if I'm adding somebody from that team. You know, if they're well from that outfield in particular, he's actually hit really well against righties so far. He's got a 409 weighted on base against right-handers. So if you're in a deeper league and you know you can kind of shift guys around and stuff, he's been leading off a lot as well. So I think he can be a sneaky deep league guy. But let's see. Let's move on to Colorado, where the Rockies' outfield situation is a bit fluid. We've still got Gerardo Parra on the DL, but we've had Raimel Tapia come up and hit pretty well, and now we've got Carlos Gonzalez coming back. So, Ben, is there any interest going on right now as far as playing time and upside for the Rockies' outfield right now?
Well, yes and no. I mean, Raimel Tapia's... I'm not that high on him, but I think if you value him for what he is, which is speedy, and, you know, he might get you a little bit of batting average, I'll take him. I like that. Cargo, I think, has really... I mean, he's obviously underperformed, but I think there's still value to be had. He's just too good of a hitter to be this bad. I think there's a little bit of injury play, and he's aging, so maybe he's a slow starter. And, of course, Blackman is elite in center, so... Those are the three guys I like. From there, it's mostly just pieces that they're sticking in since they've got, you know, you mentioned Ian Desmond on the DL. David Dahl's been on the DL all freaking year, and I don't think he's coming back anytime soon.
No, yeah.
Para. So they've got a lot of injuries there. So the other guys that kind of have been getting starts, like Alexi Amarista and Pat Valleca, I don't really have any interest in. But if you can get Tapia or you have him, I think now's the time to do it, because I think if he continues to do decently or succeed, his price is going to go up a little bit. And I mean, anybody who hits in Colorado is worth taking.
Yeah, I always got the Coors effect no matter what you have. It just seems like they have a lot of pieces in that outfield, and I think somebody is going to have to go around the trade deadline. And I when I look at what they have, I look at Gerardo Parra coming back Friday. Raimel Tapia, like we said, has hit well. He's a speedster. Cargo, I agree, Van. You know, he does have the injury issues, but I think that he's not a bad buy low guy, especially if he is in Colorado. Now, if he gets traded, I still think he can perform decent offensively. Maybe a change of scenery doesn't good. I don't know. I'm an Ian Desmond guy, so even though he's on the DL right now, that's one thing you deal with him is that's his second stint on the DL already. And when he was in there, he was kind of average in between the two trips to the DL. But overall, They've got to move somebody out, and I think it boils down to either Cargo or Gerardo Parra getting traded at some point if they think they're in it and they can add a piece or add some young players that could possibly help them next year if they think that they're out of it.
Oh, man. Looking at Cargo, I don't know. I picked him as the ultimate buy low earlier on when we talked about him. We were all gung-ho with the bounce back, and it's just not looking good. I mean, 28% hard contact rate is just way down. Everything, I mean, everything else looks pretty well in line, but taking a lot of pitches, I don't know, trying to pull everything. Ugh, I don't know if I'm buying anymore, to be perfectly honest. I think there are other calculated risks that I might be interested in. And as far as Tapia Caputing, I think that if you're looking for stolen bases, he might be a guy to look at too, along the same vein of Manny Margot, if he's picked up. And I, even though Tapia, you know, maybe he's not around or getting full playing time whenever Desmond gets back or whenever Parr gets back, depending on how that all shakes out, you know, he might be down, but not a bad short-term filler. But I guess we could move on to St. Louis, why don't we? To Van's neck of the woods.
And yeah, for what that's worth.
Yeah, so again, we talked about the outfield situation a little bit last week. But there's been some moving and shaking in the middle infield. Well, the infield in general. There's some trade conversation going on there, maybe around some Josh Donaldson talking about moving Matt Carpenter maybe back to second base. So, I always forget who we're. Somebody start us off.
Go ahead, Ron. It's your turn.
Ron.
I'll go for it. The corners, yeah, the infield for Cardinals seem to be fine. Jed Jerko is playing well at third base. He's having a nice season, and the average is kind of following the power as well, so that's always good to see out of him, because you know you're going to get some bombs from him, but you haven't gotten average in the past. So he's a guy that I like at third. Matt Carpenter's solid at first, but the middle infield is where it really takes a nosedive. I mentioned Paul DeJong earlier, and he's done enough that I think he's earned a little bit of playing time and a little bit of longer leash. However, the 35 strikeout to 3 walk ratio is going to absolutely kill you in an OBP league. So I don't know if he's a guy that I would look if you need OBP help. Colton Wong is supposed to be starting rehab today, so he could be coming back as a second baseman, because they've been kind of mixing and matching there a little bit. I think tonight, actually, they went with Luke Voit at first, Carpenter at second. They moved Garcia to third. So, because I think Jerko's out with a groin issue, so they were getting a little creative, a little Joe Maddon style there, because Luke Voigt can't play anywhere except first base, and he's really not even that great defensively there either. So he really kind of handcuffs them as far as what they can do with him. But overall, the corners are solid, and Colton Wong had a pretty nice little season going before he went on the DL as well. He was hitting .301. So if he can keep that up, really the only issue to me looks like would be shortstop, and if they could get, you know, keep Paul DeJong there, and he could give them something if they don't go out and get a big bat like Donaldson. He could be serviceable at best, but they've got some guys there that are decent, but it's just a lot of mixing and matching right now.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, there's a lot of hurt guys. I do think Wong comes back and kind of solidifies it, because I think he'll pretty much have a hold on second base job. He struggled early, but then kind of started to hit before he got hurt. And maybe he's not going to be as elite as he once was, but he'll be a decent option there at second base. Jerko's great. He's having a really, really good year. He had a really good year last year. He's kind of coming to his own. They can play him at third. They can even play him at shortstop a little bit, but I don't think that's a long-term solution. And like you said about Luke Voigt, he's playing some first base, and they've been moving Carpenter to second. It's not fluid right now just because of all the injuries and everything. Basically, the way I see it is they'll play Voigt at first, Carpenter at second, Greg Garcia or DeJong at short, and then Jerko at third, and then just kind of roll with that until they get some health back. I do think they make a trade at some point to get a real shortstop if they're in it, but the Cardinals are 3 games under .500 now. They just haven't been playing all that well. And, I mean, even with the Cubs struggling, they're in a tough division. So I could see them – they're always a smart organization, and I could see them kind of throwing in the towel a little earlier than you would expect. And if they do that, I think they sell off some pieces and try and get some stuff back to maybe do a mini rebuild. I mean, they're still going to compete for the next couple of years just because they have a good team and they have a good farm system. But – maybe they kind of cave in a little earlier than you would expect if they're out of it in the next, I don't know, 10, 15 games.
And one guy that we haven't mentioned yet is Aledmys Diaz, who made my don'ts list in the preseason, and his batting average fell as I had predicted, and so did his spot in the batting order. Now he's down at AAA. But, you know, I don't think he's AAA level, so if you can send out some buy low, now would be the time to do it. His stock is down substantially, but don't buy him for a .300 batting average guy. That was never real. He's going to hit for power and probably a pretty low batting average. But I'm still going to pump up Tommy Pham. I think that if we move to the outfield, whenever Dexter Fowler gets back, I would say that he sticks around over Randal Grichuk, who still doesn't have any semblance of play discipline. But yeah, otherwise in the middle infield, I'm not super stoked about any of the replacements for Diaz, and that's another reason why I think that he could come back up and be successful, at least a little bit more successful than he was to start off the season.
You know, wasn't even that bad. He wasn't good, but yeah. I was kind of shocked when they sent him down.
And their left field to me is as scary as their middle infield right now. Their left field with Randal Grichuk out there, there's nothing out there. So I'm daring to wonder if they might give Luke Voigt a shot in left. But if they can't come up with something else, because Grichuk is not looking good at the plate at all.
I think they were so burned by the Matt Adam left field experience. I don't know if they tried a Voigt thing. Well, you never know.
And I think Voigt grades out worse than Adams does at first in infield. So, that, you know, it's probably not something that's going to happen. But if worse comes to worse, who knows?
Kind of like when they play Pujols at third base for 5 games a year or whatever.
Yikes. Well, worst did come to worst over in New York in the Bronx, where the Yankees lost almost all of their starting offensive players over this past week or two. And I'm not even going to go over all of them, but we did have a G-Man Choi sighting today, which I saw on Facebook pleased Van greatly.
And he homered. Did you see that? He went 1-for-4 with a homer.
Did he really?
It was like 480 feet. It was an absurd homer.
Yeah. Are those G-bombs?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's certainly. So, that one was.
Definitely not G rated, that's for sure. Yeah, R rated for sure. But most importantly, perhaps of all the call ups, we have Clint Frazier, who is a highly touted prospect. So, Van, do you think that we see Frazier stick around, or is he more of a short term injury replacement for these banged up Yanks?
I don't think he sticks around for too long. I mean, he's toolsy, but he's also very young and raw. So I think they're going to let him play for a little bit, just kind of see what they have. Even if he tears the world up, I don't think he stays up for too long, because with that outfield, which they have a lot of players there, they've got Gardner, Aaron Hicks is hurt. When he comes back, he's been otherworldly. Ellsbury, I mean, they've, and Judge, of course. So I think ultimately, this weird kid who hits home runs and he's like 9 feet tall.
He's only got 29 of them.
What a loser.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, and a 450 BABIP or whatever. But
I bet he only benches 350 pounds.
He's probably available in like 90% of leagues, too.
He should be.
You should search that in your league just to see. Yeah. Maybe make a trade offer, see if you can trade Lebanese Diaz for him. You never
know. Somebody out there had probably did that at some point.
Yeah, that's possible. As bad as Judge was last year, too.
Yeah.
I think the way the outfield kind of shakes out, though, when Hicks comes back is that maybe Ellsbury finally gets relegated to like a fourth outfielder role. I think he'll still play a lot, but I don't know. I think this is the time for that to happen because he's clearly, to me, the most injury prone and least talented, we'll say, of those guys that they have. At first, they're playing G-Man Choi, and that's a very, very short-term thing. I know he's tearing it up in AAA. He's got, I don't have the number in front of me, but he's hitting like 280, 350, 550, and that's just not going to happen. He's been really bad his whole career in the majors, and I don't think that changes. So maybe once they get Tyler Austin back, or maybe they make a trade, I don't think Choi's going to be a long-term fill there at first base at all, and I wouldn't even touch him in any league. I don't care how deep it is. What's that one you talk about, Ron, where it's like a 40-team NL only or whatever? 19, I wouldn't even touch him in
19-teamer? No need for G-bombs in there.
Mm-mm.
It's a mess. It's messy when you look at the Yankees, when you look at all the injuries, when, you know, Tyler Wade is a guy we talked about last week. He said, I think he's 2-for-17 right now, so he's not really doing what we thought he would do. I was curious, when you look at all the outfield names they have out there, I was wondering, because I agree with you, Van, I think that Clint Frazier wasn't hitting that well. I mean, he was hitting bombs at AAA, but I think he was only hitting about 250, if I remember right. And he's come up and he's looked decent, but I don't know if he's going to stick up. But I was curious as to wonder if they might entertain the idea of moving him to first base, possibly, with all the names that they have. I don't know if that would happen or not. It's hard for me. If any team can absorb contracts, it's the Yankees. And so when you look at that outfield, I was curious to see what these guys make. And you got Gardner making $13 million. You got Ellsbury, who sent out whopping free agent deals, making $21 million a year. So I don't know if on most teams they would sit those guys for making that money, but I think the Yankees are one team that it really doesn't bother them if they do it or not. So Aaron Hicks, like you said, he's been on fire this season, and he's kind of the piece that you forget about with the rest of those names, because he's not really a household name like some of those other guys. But it's pretty messy. I'm just curious to see what they do at first base, because like we talked about last week with Bird and with Austin and all the guys that they have, it's a train wreck. And they've, you know, it says something when you have to DFA Chris Carter and you have to call him back up, and then you DFA him again. So it'd be interesting to see what they do, but they've got to do something at first base. But they've got to do something especially if they want to stay towards the top of that division as the year goes on.
I wish Chris Carter the best of luck in Japan, where he'll be playing the rest of his career
and hitting 70 homers a year.
He could be the next Marcus Thames in about 4 or 5 years, maybe.
Or Eric
Thames. Why do I call him Marcus, the outfielder?
You've done that three times.
Yeah. I know. I do that all the time. I think I've done that every time I've had to write about him as well. I have to go back and change it.
Who's the guy who played in Japan who set the home? Vladimir Ballantyne. That could be Chris Carter. He could be that guy.
Nice. Yeah, Tyler Austin. I didn't even mention him. Yeah, I think we talked about picking him up in deep leagues last week, and he got hurt instantly, which is what he does consistently throughout his career. And it's a bummer, but that happens. And then the worst was Dustin Fowler. I don't know if you guys saw that, but
yeah,
poor guy. He gets called up his MLB debut. He freaking just shatters his knee.
First inning.
Didn't even get to register his first plate appearance. So that's. Even though I am not necessarily a Yankees fan, you might say that I dislike the Yankees, but you still hate to see something like that. And he was a guy who I had in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. I actually dropped him in preseason, so it only made sense that this was going to be his breakout year. But it still sucks to see him on the disabled list on somebody else's team. But Clint Frazier, he's still really young, so I think that he does get sent back down eventually. And when everybody's healthy again, eventually. whenever that is. But yeah, other than that, I don't know if there's anything else too actionable. I would probably be shopping Ellsbury. Like you guys said, I think he is a fourth outfielder. I mean, they even said as much that they're not afraid to push him back to the fourth outfield role with the way that all those other guys are playing. So 21 million or whatever, you know, when you're the Yankees, it's a different story than when you're the Twins and you have to play Joe Mauer or there will be a mutiny because you're paying him $23 million a year, even though he's a platoon first baseman with no power. Not that I'm bitter.
Why don't they just like throw him back at catcher a couple of times? I mean, if you're not going to win on that team, well, just do that and see if you can get some value out of it.
That might have been an option when they had, that guy, Kurt Suzuki from last year, when they had him behind the dish, and he was just horrible defensively, but they pretty much signed Castro to be a great defender, and he is. So
yeah, that's true.
So that ship has sailed. We've only got to put up with his contract for another year and a half, so we'll see. It'll be the farewell tour next year. Don't let the door hit you. No, I give him too much.
Don't let the door hit your beautiful hair.
Inside. Anyway, let's move on to Oakland, where we have the impending return of Marcus Semien. So, Ron, can you talk about that infield a little bit? You think that Franklin Barreto is back down as soon as Semien's back?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of like we talked about with the Yankees and even the Cardinals. There's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of variables to this. Semien's coming back. Don't forget that he hit 27 bombs last year at shortstop. He only hit 238, but that's a lot of pop for your middle infield. Hit well at AAA, slugging 636 at AAA, hitting the average 364. So he's a guy that's going to get his job back. And don't forget, too, Brett's is only 21 years old, so there's no need for them to rush him. And he hasn't played – I mean, he's hit a couple of homers, but he hasn't played that well since he got the call-up, 40% K rate since he's been up with the big clubs. So the thing I think that's the biggest problem for him, and I wrote about it a few weeks ago in the on-deck circle, is Jed Lowrie. If they can get a contender that needs a middle infield bat, Jed Lowry's the guy who could potentially get moved and open up a little spot for him. And who knows, Jed Lowrie could possibly be a fit in St. Louis if they're looking for somebody that I don't think they have to give a lot to get up, because Jed Lowry's not a bad player. He's hurt a lot, but I mean, he's decent in a deeper league if you need him. But Barreto goes down, Semien gets a job back, and so really no surprises here, I don't think.
I agree. Yeah, Barreto goes down. However, I think you kind of mentioned Lowrie being traded. I think Semien could be traded as well. I'm actually trying to look up his contract. Is he just through this year, or does he have next year as well? Do either of you remember?
Semien?
Yeah.
He was just called up like 2 years ago, so he's got a lot of ways to go.
Oh, he has a lot of control. Okay, yeah. Well, maybe not so much, but you never know. I think he could be. Maybe if they can get a really good package for him, I think they could still move him. But that cheap, they'll probably hold on to him. But I think Barreto probably comes back up at some point this year just to – I mean, if they did it now, they're ready to see what they can get from him. So I think he comes up and plays a little bit through some trades, maybe some other injuries. But don't forget, they've also got Matt Chapman, who's hurt, and he'll be coming back. And it's a deep – the infield's kind of deep. I think if Yonder Alonso gets moved, because this is his last year, then maybe they play Healy at first, Chapman can play third, Lowrie gets traded, Barreto plays second. There's a lot of options. Adam Rosales is out there for whatever reason, so there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't know that I'm confident in any of it to bank on any of it, so if it's a year-to-year league, yeah, I'm confident that, or I'm saying you can go ahead and drop Barreto because you're probably not going to get your value's worth out of it. But I also do think he comes up. It's just a matter of when and if he ultimately succeeds in this, his first year.
I would say that if you were stashing Barreto and you're getting this play out of him, then I would just go back to stashing him, because I would say that a Lowrie trade does seem pretty likely. I don't know why they wouldn't just cash in on him. Clearly, they're not going anywhere this year, and it behooves them to get rid of anything that's not nailed down. So like, yeah, you could, I mean, Semien, I think a lot was made about his horrendous defensive chops last year. I don't remember if he exactly led the league in errors or how bad it was, but I remember hearing a lot of it. I think he's been a lot better. Maybe he was a lot better last year and he was terrible the other year. I can't exactly remember, but he had worked on his defense and it had improved, but I still wouldn't be surprised, you know, if you see some combination of Semien and Barreto at second and shortstop, you know, sometime in August again. So like I said, if you were stashing Semien, not that he's lit the world on fire exactly, or Barreto, I mean, I would continue to do that. I think you could get more bats from him later on in the year. But with that scorching, scintillating athletics talk, we're going to take a break and cool down a little bit. Come back with some legit or quit. All right, we have returned. We're refreshed. We're going to play some legit or quit, and it's a shortened version this week because I was busy eating ribs and getting drunk. Yeah, on the 4th of July. So that is my excuse. We're only putting two guys on legit or quit this week, but the first one is Malik Smith, who is setting the world on fire. Now, well, not exactly, but he's stealing a bunch of bags. He is scoring a lot of runs. So let's see. Van, is it you to start off with?
Sure, I think it is. I'm going to give him legit if you are going to understand what he is. The average is probably a little high for what he can hit because he's over 300, but he has zero power because he has zero home runs, but he has really good speed, and he's getting on base at a better rate than I would have guessed, but the walk rate has always been decent in the minor leagues. So if you're confident that, or if you understand that what he's doing now is what he is and you're not going to get any power, then yeah, absolutely he's legit. I think he's going to continue filling in admirably, and he's going to steal you some bases. And like I said, hit for a decent average and get on base. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And I almost was going to say exactly the same thing. He's legit if you understand the context of what you're going to use him with the stolen bases and no homers. He's sitting at the top of the lineup too. And the Rays haven't been awful. They strike out a ton, but they've been able to score some runs as well. They hit bombs. They're up there towards the league lead in home runs. You got to understand, too, that Kevin Kiermaier is going to be out until sometime in August. Don't really know for sure when. So when we get to that point in the season for fantasy, it really makes a difference if it's the beginning or end of August. And so I was curious to see what they have as far as when he comes back, if they might move. If Malik Smith can keep this up or even be close to that 308 average, if they might move him to left field and see if he's a fit there, and then they can roll with Kiermaier in center, because there's no way Kiermaier's losing his job. His defense has earned him that job for the time being. So I think he plays too well to get sent down. We'll see. I don't know. But overall, he's definitely legit. And like I said, he hits at the top of that lineup. And he's a guy in DFS, too, that I look at a lot as well because he's hitting at the top of the lineup. And he's always dirt cheap in the daily game also.
I like him. I was a little bit down on him in the offseason. I think when we were doing a Dynasty podcast with Tim McLeod and we had mentioned him. I think his value is getting artificially inflated a little bit just with the possibility of all these stolen bases. But I think that has cooled off substantially as he spent a bunch of time in the minor leagues, which is what we were basically saying was going to happen. people were going a little bit crazy for him. But I like him. He reminds me a little bit of Delino DeShields as far as the profile. You know, lefty probably strikes out too much, but should draw a fair bit of walks as well. The batting average will go down. So right now he's got a 400 BABIP, but speedy guys tend to have much higher average BABIPs. A lot of guys, I think Starling Marte has like a career 355 BABIP, somewhere in that range, you know. So even while he's just a slap hitter, you know, 21% hard contact rate, just terrible. You're getting him for the steals and you're going to get him for the runs scored. And I think you'll be able to count on that. He's another guy who I'm just riding with in the podcast league right now. And he's doing all right. So, yeah, as long as you know the context, he's legit.
Yeah, and you know, I want to point this out. I think there's a bit of a overexcitement involved with these speed prospects in this day and age just because stolen base have, quote, been harder to find.
Yeah, I've been noticing that, yeah.
The one I was discussing the other day was the Royals shortstop, Roel Mondesi Jr. I really don't have very much interest in him. I don't think ultimately he ever hits to be that successful, but people are going bonkers for that guy, and I just don't get it. I mean, if the only time you hit, you know, 280 is when you have a 390 BABIP, you're probably never really going to hit for that much average. And if you don't walk, you're not going to get on base. And if you don't get on base, you can't steal bases. So I'm just not that interested in Mondesi per se. Now, kind of to your point with Malik Smith is that a lot of the flash and the talk about him has died off. So that's when I start to like him. But I think if you're overvaluing a lot of these stolen base prospect guys, you're only going to get burned because I just feel like the burnout rate is so much higher. I mean, we all thought why can't I think of his name? Billy Hamilton. We all thought he was going to be, you know, the greatest player in baseball. And yes, he steals bases, but he sure sucks in every other facet of the game. And I think that's ultimately, if you get the best of what you're going to get that. They have to have some power to become a Starling Marte. Otherwise, you're going to get, you know, at best, like a Billy Hamilton.
I completely agree. And another name that I'm going to throw out in that same vein that I felt was really overrated, overdrafted this year, and like I said, overrated in prospect circles, is Jose Peraza, who, you know, he's going to lead off for all these guys. And nobody look up his page right now. I didn't figure he would be a leadoff hitter, and sure enough, he's been hitting at the bottom of the order. Take a guess at what his walk rate is.
Oh, boy. You go first, Ron.
I know it's low because I wrote about him on Fantastics the other night. I want to say about 3.5%.
I'll go slightly higher. I'll say 4.5.
He has a league worst walk rate of 1.6%.
Okay.
Oh my. That's like absurdly bad.
Yeah. So he's not leading off anytime soon. I don't care how fast he is. When your OBP is 278 and you're not Billy Hamilton, you're going to be at the bottom of the lineup, and he doesn't have a whole lot of power either. So.
Yeah, we poo-pooed him pretty hard in the off-season because for that exact reason. So this is one of the few instances where we're very much right.
it just goes to show you, too. I mean, when you get these guys that are going to steal you 50 bases, that's great. But the 255 average, the 290 OBP, you're better off just trying to get guys that are going to steal you 8, 10, 12 bases and hit, you know, 40, 30, 25 bombs or whatever, and just kind of piece it together that way. Because at the end of the day, if you can get a few guys that can do that, you can offset those 55 or 60 steals that you're not going to get, and you can let somebody else do that and suffer the consequences as far as their other categories.
It was like a few years ago when this is before OBP leagues really took off, and Adam Dunn was in the peak of his career. Sure, he was hitting you 40 home runs, but he was also batting 190 at a time when, you know, league average across the league was like 295.
Well, he was Joey Gallo. That's what Joey Gallo
he was. Yeah, and, you know, this day and age, Gallo has value because batting averages are so low. But back then, they weren't low enough to really warrant that to the extent that it kind of happened. And that's the same thing you're just saying with these speed guys. Is sure, they may steal you 50 bases, but they're going to kill you everywhere else. So just do it a different way. Don't get too hyped up about these prospects would be my point.
The only place I ever tried it, if I can get one of those guys like Billy Hamilton, and I didn't give up much to give VR in the offseason, so I felt okay with that, is maybe if it's a five outfielder league where you can have one of those specialty guys in there and you can maybe construct an outfield where the other four can kind of offset what Billy Hamilton's going to lose for you. But other than that, if you're in a three outfield league, I couldn't be any less interested in guys like that.
Yeah, there are certain leagues where you got to do what you got to do. And if there's just no other replacement and you have to take your lumps with, you know, Jose Peraza or whatever, there's even worse examples that, you know, I don't come to mind right now, but you got to do what you got to do. But let's see. Let's move on to quite a long discussion on speed there, but let's move on to Carlos Rodon, who was recently reinstated from the disabled list. And Ron, we'll start with you here. His first start was a disaster, but the last one was quite a bit better. So which Carlos Rodon do you think we'll see more of the rest of the way?
I think we'll see more of the guy in the second game. And I kind of look at what he's doing, and I look at a comparison maybe as a Jeff Samardzija kind of guy, where, you know, maybe the whip and the ERA is going to be a little higher than you want, but you also could get 200 Ks out of Samardzija if he's healthy for the full season. So when you look at his first outing, he went 5 1/3. He walked 6 guys, but he only allowed 2 hits. So that part was nice. It was the control that was the issue. The second outing, he walked 3 guys, so went down a little bit. The FIP is not bad at 3.42. BABIP's 214. I like to see him have a little bit higher strand rate. If he's going to walk these guys, you've got to get them off the base paths. And so if they're coming home, that's going to end up killing him. I think he's going to grow up. I think he's going to get it a little bit. But obviously, he's got to quit walking guys. You know, that translates to a 18.4% walk rate. So the control, I think, will be there eventually. But I don't think you're going to see it to where he's going to be an ace level guy. So once again, it's kind of like with the context of Malik Smith. I like him. I think he's legit. I think he can strike some guys out. But you're going to have to be able to withstand the high whip and the high walk rate if you do have him.
Yeah, you know, I in the past was, I won't say high on him, but I did like Carlos Rodon. And nothing really changed in his profile or what he's done. But just over time, as I've thought about it, I've just lost a lot more interest. I'll compare him to another Giants teammate of his. And that's Matt Moore. I think He's going to be better than Matt Moore because he strikes out more batters than Matt Moore, but he's got control like Moore does, which is really, really bad. So he's going to have to make some major strides for me to really want to kind of invest in him. So right now I'm going to say quit. I'll let someone else take the risk and I just won't worry about it. And in fact, that last start where he was pretty good was against Oakland in Oakland. So I'm not going to hold a lot of stock into that. The first one against the Yankees, he got hit around a little. Well, he walked a lot more. So they're a better team. It's somewhere in between, but I'm going to lean a little more Oakland game than I am Yankees game just because he walks so many, like you said, Ron. But he will strike out a few, so there's some hope to be had. I just don't think I'm going to take the plunge or the risk with him here.
I am going to take the risk, baby. I'm a sucker for Carlos Rodon. I always have been. So the people out there aren't going to be surprised at all. I think that the first start definitely knocking off some rust, but he's had quite a long layoff, so I benched him for that game. I was sort of expecting something like that, especially as bad as he had been on his rehab in the minors. If you looked at those games, they were ugly. So I was going to take kind of a wait and see approach. But with the favorable matchup against Oakland, I did throw him out there and I was pleased with the results. I think that the walks will continue to go down, like I said, as he sort of gets back into everything. Last year, 2.95 walks per nine. That's really nice. And that's up, you know, His rookie year, 4.59 walks per nine. Much, much better. And so I talked about this almost ad nauseum in the off season. And then sadly, as high as I was on him, he ended up missing, you know, half the season, go figure. But, you know, he, like I said, last year, huge improvements in his walk rate. Started using the changeup a lot more to avoid platoon splits. And this year so far, 13% pitch deployment from that changeup. So he's not just living off of the slider, which some people would, you know, maybe I think you can always fall back on sort of a Chris Archer kind of profile and still strike out a ton of guys and just use that slider 40% of the time. But the best route for him would be to use that changeup, which he does seem to be comfortable with. So I'm all about it. He's got a ton of whiffs so far, and I think the control is going to improve. I'm picking him up everywhere. Not that he was really, you know, I play in deeper leagues, so he wasn't really available anywhere. But if he was, I would be picking him up. So he gets a legit label from me. But let's talk about some closers, boys. Let's see, Van, we'll go out to you.
Oh,
You're gonna trade me the closer in Texas, right?
Jose Leclerc. Is that who you want? Yeah. I made it. Obviously, I'll trade him. I don't have any real need for it. It just kind of worked out that Kayla got hurt, and I thought Leclerc was going to get the job. I'm pretty sure I said that here a few weeks ago at least. But basically, looking at the Rangers' pen, Bush has been okay as compared to the several blowups. I think he's had two scoreless spots. Kayla's hurt, so he's kind of out of the picture now. Leclerc has been good, but he's struggled a bit since I tabbed him as my closer of the day back when. But he's been good lately again, and I think he's on top of the committee chart right now. So I think he's really the closer. And unless he starts, you know, blowing 2, 3, 4 saves here in a row, I don't think Bush gets the real job back unless it's, you know, him being absolutely shut down. And I just don't foresee that. So I still think Leclerc is the guy, but as of right now, it's still a committee. So there's no real, you don't want to basically make huge trades for Leclerc because there is a chance that he loses the job, but I still do peg him to be the guy who gets the job.
Yeah, same here. He's probably my favorite one in the pen, although the 25 innings he's pitched, the 15 walks and the 9 runs kind of concern me a little bit, but I still like the stuff. Yeah, as far as Matt Bush in there, I think it's only a matter of time before he gets the axe. And I believe that they added Jason Grilly as well, who became an addition there. So that's a guy that's in the mix that has some closing experience that they could throw out there. But the Frenchman, Jose Leclerc, is still my guy. The Texas, can we call him like the Texas croissant?
Ooh, that's a good one.
But they'll do that? Okay.
I'll do it.
Well, all right, we'll add that.
The Texas croissant.
Texas croissant.
Oh. You know, it sucks so hard because I've been stashing Kayla for most of the season, and the second that Bush finally gets demoted, Kayla goes on the freaking DL with a shoulder injury. Supposedly he'll be back immediately following the All-Star break, so it sounds like it'll be close to a minimum stay for him. But by that point, I'm afraid that Leclerc will have used the stinky cheese wheel to his advantage and locked down a whole bunch of saves and celebrated with some fancy French wine. But, you know, and so I don't know if Kella gets any saves at this point. I think you have to own Leclerc and just think that if he does okay in the short term, that he'll keep the job. Unless they're really dead set on Kella getting saves for some reason, then I don't know why they don't just stick with Leclerc. And, you know, like you said, with the walks, that is an issue, but he's been able to wiggle out of everything. It makes it easy when you got a 14K per nine. So yeah. You're going to strand a lot of runners that way. So, yeah, he's got to be added in all leagues.
Is Kella, is he like Hawaiian? Where was he born? Like, that just sounds like a Hawaiian name.
Well, I looked him up last week and I can't remember where it was, but it was somewhere.
From LA.
I would say, yeah, somewhere where you wouldn't think he's from based on his name. I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's interesting. That's too bad, because if he was Hawaiian, I was going to call him like the dinner roll. Like, that would be a similar good name for him, because that's like one of those things, King's something or other.
It's Hawaiian,
you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Those are good. I could eat like bags of those things in one sitting.
Where's Leclerc from?
Well, it's not France. I can sure tell you that.
Luxembourg?
Let's see.
We got to find this out.
I'm looking it up right now.
Keelan Kayla was born in Los Angeles.
Yes, and Leclerc is born in Esperanza.
Ooh.
What that's worth. So that's interesting. So Dominican Republic for him.
How deceiving. I don't like being
my
deceived,
favorite thing Leclerc. With the Dominican Republic, where several years ago, Sammy Sosa did these commercials, and it was just, they would focus on him, and he would say, come to the Dominican Republic. And that was the entire commercial. Like, their advertisement was just that Sammy Sosa's there.
Dude, I'd go there to hang out with Sosa.
Was that
this
before,
was after was the that, court bat.
Was that before he had the weird skin thing, like Michael Jackson going on?
Yeah. No, he looked normal at this point.
All right, that's good.
Well,
that's way more convincing to go there then.
Believe it or not, I've got that. Vitiligo is what it's called.
Oh. Really?
I do, yeah. So right now I'm like just weirdly patchy in a couple places. But eventually, I mean, luckily I'm pasty as milk, so like it's the harder to tell than from
it's a lot more prominent on dark skin people, yeah.
But eventually I will be pigmentless, most likely.
Interesting. You'll be like, we can get an albino farm somewhere and you off.
It'll be like the island of Dr. Moreau. Like,
I watched that recently. I'm not exaggerating.
I love that movie.
3 weeks
ago. Weird.
And the big guy from Hellboy's in it, Ron Perlman. And that was like, what's his name? Marlon Brando's last movie. It was so absurd, but it was worth a watch. It was interesting.
It's definitely worth a watch. Oh, man. what are we talking about? Ron, why don't you tell us what the hell's going on out there in Baltimore in their bullpen?
Well, Zach Britton's back today, and our guy Buck says that he's gonna ease him back into the closer role. So I think with the way he's been on the DL for so long and as dominant as he was last year and as good as he is, I think he'll stick to that, and I think he'll ease him back in there. I don't know how long it's going to take. But you keep Brad Brock in there until Britton comes back, and I was reading a couple of things today where Brad Brock could be in yet another guy out there that a team that's looking for a bullpen arm or even maybe a possible closer, because he's filled in pretty well, could be a guy that could get dealt. But I think it's just a matter of time. If you own Brock, you might get a few more saves out of him. But Zach Britton will be back in there. I wouldn't say with him being a veteran guy that it would take that long for him to get acclimated and get back in there, but it's his job, obviously.
I agree. I think maybe they go a little easy on him, but maybe it's just until the All-Star break. So maybe they try and get him some low-leverage situations. So if they come up and they've got a 3-run lead, yeah, sure, maybe they'll throw him in and see what he can do. But if it's a 1-run lead, maybe they've got him pitching earlier and letting Brad Brock and his delicious, nasty candy pitch later and get a save. So that, you're right. They're going to ease him into it, but he's the closer long-term. He's elite. So he's going to get the job back as long as he doesn't get hurt again, and he'll get the saves in Baltimore. So maybe if you can try and get something out of Brad Brock, I mean, you probably can't at this point, but now's probably the time to do it if you haven't already.
Quick, what's your favorite Brock's candy?
Dinosaur egg things.
The hard one. Do I have to be more specific?
You just described 98% of Brock's candy.
Exactly. I don't know the difference beyond that. I'm not a huge hard candy guy. So.
Brock's Rocks. It's Rocky D in 93. That's what just came up on the internet that I'm looking at. There's a website called collectingcandy.com. This is gross, and it's all the Brock stuff. Okay, don't visit that website, listeners.
I'm a fan of the chocolate stars. I like the chocolate stars they make.
I don't know what that is, but it sure sounds bad.
No, they're actually really good. They're not hard candy. They're actually decent.
That might be even worse.
No.
Okay. Well, I did just like literally as we were talking about it, I saw a flash across the MLB TV that Britton was pitching the seventh inning against the Brewers today. So they are definitely working him in some low leverage as they're down 4-0. So
see, that's perfect.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, for Brock owners, I think you got to hang on. He's a good handcuff. I mean, we've seen Britton hit the DL multiple times this year. Maybe it's an injury that surfaces again. So he's definitely towards the top of my closer handcuff hierarchy. And yeah, maybe he does get dealt. Who knows? But Ben, we'll go to you. What the hell's going on there? We're going to go back to the Cardinals. What about their bullpen between Rosenthal and O?
You know, it's been interesting because at the beginning of the year, O really struggled. And then he kind of settled down. But Rosenthal was pretty much shut down for most of the season. Finally, they kind of say, O struggles a little more. We'll do a committee. Maybe Rosenthal's going to get some saves. And Rosenthal has. I think he's gotten two of the last couple. But he also came out in a game and basically almost blew the save. And they had to bring in, I think, Bowman to get it. So I don't know. It's a committee right now, and I think O is probably the top man on that committee. But I also think that they probably want Rosenthal to have the job because he's a little more long-term. And he has that closer look and feel. He's got the really big fastball, strikes out a lot. And if he can get back to being as good as he was a few years ago, or even just as good as he was at the beginning of this season, that's the guy they want getting saves, and that's the guy who's going to get them. However, if he walks a ton of people like he has recently and blows a few saves, they'll stick with O, because why not? So, I don't know, maybe Cecil comes in and gets a vulture save every now and then too, but for the most part, this is a two-man job, and I think O is the top guy for now.
Yeah, I agree. It's yet another bullpen that we're talking about on here that I want to try to have nothing to do with. And I don't think I own any shares of the Cardinals bullpen, luckily. And I was looking at Rosenthal, and oh, it's going to be one of those two guys from here on out, I think. The other guy that you mentioned, Van, that I looked at was Matt Bowman. But when you look at his stuff, like, you know, he throws four pitches. His fastball is only low 90s. So I don't know if he necessarily has closer type stuff. He's more of a mid relief guy, I think. Does have a lot of holds. So if you're looking for a holds guy, ERA is a little high, but he does have 14 holds on the year. But that, it's another bullpen that I don't want anything to do with. But I think it's O and Rosenthal back and forth from here on out.
See, I'm a little more interested in this bullpen. I'm not necessarily staying away. I've actually, in the podcast league, I handcuffed Sung Hwan Oh because he was obviously already owned. He was drafted. But Rosenthal was floating around out there. And so I went and picked him up. And let's see as I pull up his numbers here. See, whereas O has definitely seen a downtick in stuff from last year. You look at, you know, 11.5 K per nine down to 8.36 this year, and his walks have risen 2.03 to 2.39. You know, his velocity's dipped, and his ERA's up at 3.58. But his FIP and XFIP, 4.32 and 4.95, whereas, like, Trevor Rosenthal, his stuff is ticked up in every way. Granted, his walks still aren't great, but, you know, down from 6.47 last year, obviously that was a huge issue with him. But 4.60 walks per nine this year, 13.79, just striking out a ton of people. And while his ERA is 4.31, his FIP is 2.55 and his XFIP is 2.80. So even though he doesn't seem to want the job, like, as soon as they're pretty much ready to pull the plug on, oh, it's like, well, Rosenthal, it's time for you to give up a run or three every single outing. So I don't know if it's the nerves or what, but, you know, just 24% hard contact for Rosenthal. So hopefully he, I don't know, rounds back into form. I don't know why he just decided to suck all of a sudden lately, but I'm owning both of these guys if I'm chasing saves, which I always am. If you guys know me, I'm a save chaser, baby.
So. Well, and you know, Rosenthal is a little heady. I've seen some interviews, read some interviews with him. I mean, this isn't a Rick Ankiel thing where he's just going to totally lose it and then have to come back and be an outfielder. But this might be more of a Roberto Osuna thing where he just needs a little bit of help. And I don't necessarily know if it's that far along as far as a mental problem or mental illness. But he's probably a little too smart for his own good in this case. I think he ultimately gets it under control because it's not really that big of a deal. So, yeah, I completely agree with you, say, but he is a bit of a mental guy. Maybe a little Zach Greinke-ish, if you want to go that way.
Okay. Yeah, you've seen before with some of these guys that, yeah, no, sometimes being really smart ends up being detrimental. But, you know, he did have seasons of 45 and 48 saves before last season when he just fell off the rails. So we've seen him do it before, and I am pretty confident that he can do it again. So he's a nice handcuff as far as I'm concerned. So it'll be interesting to see how that bullpen shakes out over the second half of the season. But we're going to move on to the prospect portion of the show now. And Ozzie Albies is going to be the first guy that Ron's going to tell us about. He's, you know, pretty touted prospect, Ron.
Well, and like I alluded to in the article, it says a lot about the Braves system when I'm just now in week 14 of the season writing about their top prospect possibly getting called up and helping you out. And when you look at Albies, it's another case of just trying to clear a path to the majors. He's a guy that started out as a shortstop, very good defensively, one of the best, better facets of his game. They got a guy that shortstop already that's pretty good, Dansby Swanson, so I don't think that they're going to move Swanson anytime soon to another spot. So it seems that Albies is going to be the second baseman of the future, and they also have a good veteran there that they traded for in the offseason, Brandon Phillips. So he's a guy that's going to block the way as of right now, but also a lot of talk about Brandon Phillips being moved. So Albies is not a guy you're going to count on for power. He's another one of those steals guys, but I think there's a little more to him as far as at the plate than you know, we alluded to, like with Malik Smith earlier, because Albies is a top prospect in all of baseball as well, not just for the Braves. And 21 steals so far. He scored 51 times. He's hitting .288, .334 on base. It seems like the homers are ticking up a little bit as he's maturing. He's only 20 years old still, so there's really no rush to get him there because the Braves, you know, as we've talked about in previous weeks, because that's another thing is I've had a ton of Braves in this article, but it speaks to the depth of their farm system and how good they really are. He's a guy that they don't need to rush based on how old he is. However, he's another one of these prospects that I've talked about week after week that it's getting to the point where it's hard to ignore what he's doing. He's a switch hitter. Pretty good from both sides of the plate, hitting .261 against righties, but he's hitting .361 against lefties so far this year. Now, the sample size is a little smaller, but when you look at the homers, as I alluded to earlier, he's got 7 homers, and 3 of those have come in 86 at-bats against lefties, where the other 4 have come in 230 at-bats against righties. So he's somebody that, you know, you're going to get a little bit from on both sides of the plate. He's stolen over 100 bases in his career. And, you know, if they move Brandon Phillips, it's only a matter of time before they bring him up because there's not a lot he's got left to prove at the AAA level. So as far as fantasy perspective, you know, we don't care about the defense so much. The only thing the defense helps us with in a fantasy perspective is it may give a guy a longer look as far as if he can flash the glove a little bit. But overall, he's a guy that if you're in dynasty leagues, he's long gone by now. Even if it's a small dynasty league, he's a player that shouldn't be out there. If he is, you need to snatch him up now. And he's a guy in a yearly league that if you have room for, you know, we're getting closer to that. You know, we're in July. That trade deadline's coming up, so it could be something that Brandon Phillips might see an opportunity to go to a contender, maybe win a ring. He might sign off on it. And the Braves could get something back to add even more to that farm system. So if he's in yearly leagues and you have a deep bench and you're not getting decimated by the DL this year, take a flyer on him, put him on your bench, forget about it, and then maybe if he gets called up later on, you can reap the benefits down the stretch closer to the playoffs.
And he's one of those guys, you know, we talked quite a bit about stolen base guys that are, you know, zeros as far as like on base and power and everything. He's only, like you said, only 20 years old at AAA, and he's got a 158 ISO, so there is a little bit of power there, and he's going to continue to grow into that, so... So definitely not a total zero there, but whereas Albies is very well known in the prospect community, I have never heard of Deck McGuire. Deck. Make that up?
I did not. Well, it's getting to that point where when I'm trying to find pitchers, I may just start creating fake profiles just to see, because it's getting kind of sketchy as far as guys that I think that can give you anything, because that's kind of the point is – you know, the whole article is I want to try to help people out with people they can add and get something out of. And so our guy, Deck McGuire here, older prospect, college guy, 28 years old. He is another Reds farmhand. He's kind of bounced around a little bit. He's been in Toronto's organization. That's where he originally got drafted. He is a former number one pick. He was 20th overall, I think, in 2010. And he benefits from – and one of the reasons I picked him is because kind of the same reason I picked the used car salesman Sal Romano last week is the Reds' rotation is just kind of an open door for anybody to get an audition. I think we might be able to see if we can get a tryout for them eventually if things keep going the way they're going. However, Homer Bailey's back. He looked decent in his second start. You know, he's a guy that he hasn't made more than 20 starts since 2014. So they're not counting on, I don't think, a lot out of him. He is only 31, though. It seems like Homer Bailey should be like about 51, like Jamie Moyer style, when we think of him. But you got guys like Adelman, Feldman, Castillo in the rotation. There's not a lot there that gives you a lot of confidence. So I was looking at Deck McGuire. It's by far his best season in the minors at Triple A. He's never gotten a shot in the bigs, and he's been around a while. As I said, he's an older prospect, so that he's got that going for him as well. He's a big guy, 6'6", 220. He doesn't really have huge fastball, sits in the low 90s. He throws four pitches. He throws a changeup and a curveball. Scouts agree his slider is his best pitch. And he's been able to stay healthy throughout most of his career. So he's a guy that if they call him up, he could give you a few starts here and there, but I wouldn't look at him as more of maybe a streaming option in deeper leagues. Or as I talked about earlier with Matt Bowman, he could be a middle relief guy for the Reds. And if you're in a, say, a holds league especially, he could be a guy that could get you a few holds. But he walks a lot of guys too, so that's another thing. The 9.6 walk rate is little high for my taste, especially with that translates when you think about it per game. It translates to about 3.5 walks a game, which is way too many. So I think he's better suited for a middle relief role. So he's a guy that I wouldn't necessarily look to add in any format until if he does get called up, and just kind of wait and see what he does as far as what the role is. But as I said, it's not so much speaking to the talent that he has. It speaks more to the lack of talent in the Reds rotation and in the bullpen, and they could use him at some point just to see what they have with him. Because like I said, he is 28 years old, so he's kind of getting to the end of his rope at this point. But he's a guy to kind of keep in the back of your mind. But don't run out and add him. Don't get too excited about our boy Deck McGuire here.
They got a roof for a guy named Deck.
His name sounds like two things. Number one, like he should work at Home Depot. And number two, like a really bad nickname for Mark McGuire in those seasons he was hitting all the home runs. Like, that's old Deck McGuire up there. Swings a hot stick.
Look at that. He planted another one in the deck. How about that?
There was also that season where Mark McGuire hit like 24 home runs and like 13 singles. Like, that's how he was a home run or nothing.
I wonder if he has a brother named Patio McGuire.
If you Google Deck McGuire and you type in Deck and then M, it says Deck Materials or Deck McGuire.
So a lot of people that shop at Home Depot or construction people might know about him.
That's
already
true. He helps them out.
Yeah. His mother
John
was...
Smoltz. This is the day of the old commercials with baseball people, because there was one with John Smoltz where he wandered into this family's yard and they were building something like a doghouse. And he's like, hey, take me to Home Depot. I'll show you how to buy some stuff. So they took John Smoltz to Home Depot, because if he wanders into your yard and asks, you take John Smoltz to Home Depot. And then they built the doghouse, and it was delightful for everyone.
That's a good Saturday right there.
I think I'd like it more. I'd like it more if his name was Doghouse McGuire. That'd be cool.
He might be in the doghouse if he pitches like Homer Bailey. But I'm going to give out a pair of Dodgers prospects real quick here. Alex Verdugo.
I like me some Alex Verdugo.
Do you own him, do you?
I do. I have for a while. I've always liked him.
Yes, the double plus bat speed, just incredible hit tool. He's just 21 years old. Left-handed hitter, about 6'2", 210, but he's at Triple A, and that is what makes this line so impressive, because he's only 21 years old. Hitting 350, 420, 469 with a 35-31 walk to strikeout ratio. Just owning the plate and spraying to all fields. It is the PCL, so you got to take the numbers with a grain of salt. But, you know, like I said, he sprays the ball to all fields. And that, while it's good for the batting average, it's going to hinder his power a little bit, because he's only got 3 bombs so far this year and 17 doubles, 4 triples. So more of a batting average on base type guy than a power hitter. But, you know, for sure. But and then a different guy in the same organization, DJ Peters. He's 21 years old as well, but he's only in high A. With the high A Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. Good team. That's a big difference between him and a guy like Verdugo. But he's, you know, Peters is sitting well himself, 278, 386, 538. But he's got 16 home runs and three steals, 12% walk rate, but 32% strikeout rate. So you got to see that trick down a little bit. But just a huge dude, 6'6", 225. Another outfielder. Both these guys outfield prospects, but he's a righty, so definitely guys that are moving up in the Dodgers system that I would be in on. But with that, that's going to do it for our prospects. Let's move on to the weekend streaming as we round out the show, boys. So Van, go ahead and start us off. Who have you found for us this week?
I don't really want my name attached to any of this, so let's just not say Van, and then we'll just talk, and maybe people get confused.
These pitchers are fully endorsed by Van. He would add them in all formats.
It's not pretty. I did a Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing, and I would rather just do a Monday thing and just not do any of them. But I went with a couple of Padres. Oh, boy. On Friday, Clayton Richards faces the Phillies. Phillies are 27th in the league against left-handers as far as batting average. And then Saturday, Yuli Chacin faces those same Phillies, and they're 22nd in the league against right-handers. So basically, I just like these two guys because it's a decent matchup. Neither one are great pitchers. And neither one really do anything well, but if you're in the scenario that we're in, which is trying to find a deep sleeper for just plug in for some starts, that's kind of what I look for. So I like Richards on Friday, or Richard rather, and Yuli Chacin Saturday. And then Sunday, proverbial Texas Rangers pitching prospect. And I say proverbial because it just doesn't seem like a real thing because those pitching prospects never work out. Like Chichi Gonzalez, do you guys remember him?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I loved him on the PGA Tour in the 80s. He was really good.
That guy. But Martin Perez is who I'm talking about. He faces the Angels, who are 19th in the league in runs scored against left-hand hitters because they don't have Mike Trout in their lineup. So that's a decent kind of thing to exploit. I believe they're at Angel Stadium. There's a chance I'm wrong on that because I didn't write it down. But he's a guy that used to have a decent ERA but never really struck anyone out. So maybe he kind of wanders into that, gets a lot of ground balls, defense plays well behind him, and he just gets a decent start. So those are my three, take him or leave him.
I'm going to try to get through mine without throwing up in my mouth. So if I pause here for a second, that's why. You stole Clayton Richard from me. I want to add, too, that he's only 8% owned. So there's a reason he's only 8% owned after the first game of the season. He was an early Cy Young candidate after day one, and that's really fallen off since then. Saturday, quickly becoming my boo, Mike Clevinger. Mike Clevinger is 31% owned, which the numbers he's posting and posted last couple starts, that's really shocking to me. And we mentioned Joe Mauer's hair earlier. Mike Clevinger has some great hair. If you don't know what it looks like, you better Google it now. And then Sunday, we're going to go with Jose Urena just because it's a good matchup. He's at San Francisco, and San Francisco is the worst home batting team in the league, and he is only 28% owned.
Yeah, Urena was one of my picks as well, and I definitely endorse the Clevinger call. I believe that's against Detroit, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's been really good at limiting right-handed pitchers so far, or right-handed hitters so far. Well, probably pitchers too. but yeah, so, and you know, as righty-heavy as Detroit is, and that definitely is a good matchup. We saw that in his last matchup too. He did really well against them. But so then the only other guy that I have to throw out there is Luis Castillo, which, of course, he's a member of the Reds. So we've talked about them quite a bit. But this dude is just striking out all kinds of guys. And despite a 4.96 walks per nine so far in his 16 and a third innings, over 80 innings in the minor leagues, he had a 1.46 walks per nine. So he's got just some crazy heat. He throws like 97.8 is what he's averaged on his fastball so far this year. Average. It's ridiculous. And I guess his control is decent, too. He's a changeup slider. So he's got my attention. Hopefully in the right matchup, he can actually excel. He is going to be at Arizona. So, yeah, not a great matchup, but we're grasping at straws. That's sort of my Hail Mary guy right there, as he's got a 4.41 ERA. So, like, maybe more of a stash. because I don't even, you'd have to be in a pretty deep league. That's probably an only league is the only place that I'd actually really recommend streaming him. But I think I deserve a week off after a near no hitter with Mike Foltynewicz last week. Almost got through this segment without bragging about that.
Almost. And yeah, I tweeted at you the whole time that was happening. I'm like, he's just going to talk about this so much. Just you wait. I like Foltynewicz too. So I'm all in on him. And I think that's a great indicator of some stuff that he can do. He's got really good good stuff if he can develop some command that can be par for the course.
See, I've never really been on him. I've always pegged him as a reliever because of the lack of command. But it was just a matchup last week, and that worked out. And that's what we're doing here. So,
right. Yep.
But that's going to wrap us up, boys. So what do we got going on this week, Ron?
Same old Fantastics on deck circle next week. I want to throw in real quick my minor league team shout out this week. And by the way, too, these minor league teams, if anybody has any connections to these teams, you know, we're giving you shout outs. We're giving you love. We always accept free gear, free swag from these places. So the one I went, well, it's funny you say that, because the reason I picked the team I picked this week is because of that. The Brooklyn Cyclones are who I'm going with. They are the short season Class A for the New York Mets, and I'm picking them because I think the way they were named was cool. They were a subject of a name the team contest, and they are named after the Cyclone roller coaster at the Astroland amusement park on Coney Island. So I thought that was kind of a cool story. But also, Van shares my deep adoration for Seinfeld, and if you search up Brooklyn Cyclones giveaways, they have done some amazing Seinfeld bobbleheads in the past. They have done a second spitter. If you've seen the
yes.
Roger McDowell episode, they have, and this year on the same night, they are doing a Soup Nazi and a Jackie Childs bobblehead, which I think are absolutely ridiculously amazing. So I threw them out there. Brooklyn Cyclones, all around cool. Cool giveaways, and even some Seinfeld, non-Seinfeld bobbles they have done have been amazing. But overall, I think the way they named the team is pretty cool as well. So that's what I got going on. Another thing I want to throw out, did you guys remember outfield prospect Anthony Alford for the Jays?
Did he become love of a my pitcher, life. Or is that someone else I'm thinking
No, I read
of? No, he's the one that got hurt.
Yeah, I read a thing the other day where he's trying to make a comeback as a pitcher, and he's consistently hitting 100 on the gun. And so that was kind of interesting. So I meant to throw that out there in the on deck circle. But if you search up Anthony Alford, it's kind of a cool article to read, just to kind of see how he's made that transition. But I want to throw that out there too.
Interesting, and it can happen. I mean, Rick Ankiel did the opposite. So who came back as a knuckleballer a few years ago? Jason something rather. He was a Padre, and I think he pitched a season in the majors in the bullpen as a knuckleballer, and he was like 40 or 41. So it can happen. That's not out of – well, I won't say it's out of the ordinary, but it's not unusual, as Jones might say.
Within the same organization, I believe Anthony Gose has failed as a hitter, and they're going to bring him back as a pitcher.
Oh, you know what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said Anthony Alford. I meant Anthony Gose. You're exactly right. Yeah.
My mistake.
I'm slipping on the names tonight.
It happens when you get as old as us.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, Ron, Ben, what do you got going on this week?
Well, first off, I want to give you a couple of statistics that I have read for the evening. First off, we discussed Malik Smith. He went 4-for-4 today with 3 runs and a stolen base. So
it's
pretty impressive. Good job, Malik Smith. But more importantly, Jonathan Gray, Rockies pitcher, just hit a 467-foot homer in Colorado. He didn't give up. He did not throw a baseball that got hit that far. He himself hit a home run that went 467 feet. That is insane to see a pitcher do. And it's apparently the longest one since 2015, and I don't know who hit the one in 2015. Maybe probably Cliff Lee or Madison Bumgarner or something like that.
Yeah.
As far as me, I've got my column coming up, Hold or Fold. That'll be up tomorrow. I'm going to do the writing for that tonight. I also think I'm going to do some writing about the All-Star game, maybe talk about the players that were selected and whether or not they were the right decisions. I'm sure you can find that on Big Guy Fantasy Sports if I do it, because it's always a big question of time. But you can always find my Hold or Fold column there weekly, Big Guy Fantasy Sports. My website is BootuInc.com. That's BOOTUINC.com. That's baseball, politics, goofs, Seinfeld, whatever you want to talk about. It's great. And then lastly, my team that I'm going to go ahead and give you this week is not necessarily the best named team, but it's a very valid team name, and that is the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, who I just found out they were named the Iron Pigs after Scout Pig.
Mocking him because he has such a big gut?
No, it's actually because he's so iron.
Well played.
Nailed it.
I believe that's with the Phillies, right? Because I think that's where Nick Williams is playing.
Yeah.
Or was it?
Yeah. Allentown, I think, is where they're at.
Yeah, okay. Well done. All right. Well, yeah, you can find me at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, Fantastics, all the normal crap. But more importantly, there's some exciting news on the horizon regarding the podcast. So look out for that in the coming weeks. We'll announce that later. And then, what else? Oh, get your questions in if you have any Game of Thrones related stuff, because we're going to be doing that podcast next Tuesday, myself and Van, and the return of Jesse Jordan. So that will be very exciting. I can't wait for that. So if there's anything you want us to touch on, go ahead and reach out to us on Twitter. And yeah, we'll also have more Thrones-related stuff on the website and just all-around fun time. Oh, and next week, too, I think we're going to talk about some potential second-half MVP picks predictions. So if you want to tweet us that with your own predictions, and we shall discuss that on the show as well. But with that, folks, till next week, be safe. And may the fantasy gods shine upon you.